hold her naked body firmly in my hand, and I close my eyes tightly, and I slowly bring her whole closer to my lips, and I could be killed for what I'm thinking. It's beyond human experience. I could be killed for what I'm thinking, drinking cyanide in my dreams. It seems that I'm moving past my past, past elementary school days, past K to the 12th grade, where everybody knew that Boogie Down Productions would always get paid in full like Rakim, at least until black radio forgot him. Went rock bottom, fell 12 levels below stardom. Sold out, where all the white national radio conglomerates had him strung out. Like my old high school friend who used to wear three different leather suits a day and push the dime pieces in the jet black Benz. At least until he saw half his life end, getting shot down on the roof of the projects. Now he just shoots up on the roof of the projects. And yet, even he has a longer life expectancy than me, because I could be killed for what I'm thinking. And I let her hole sit completely on my tongue, and I'm just dying for her to come. I want her whole nine to just ejaculate straight through my mind. I want her to come so hard that she pulls off my headpiece so that I might finally have peace in my head. But instead I hear a million answers to jail that I have no rights, I have no life. They tell me I am exactly what comes after the ones that survived the middle passage. They tell me I am directly descended from the ones who thought it was punkish to jump ship. The ones who mastered their masters, those angels, those gods who worked hellishly hard from can't see to can't see in a plantation, slaving for the very same Satan that they created. They grafted their own masters. And every night, a million bodies blackened and cooked soot on the bottom of a crack pipe in the dark corner of the basement of a crack house when the moon signals midnight, sing to me. They sing that I am the ungrateful realization of their dreams. They sing that I am their social, technologically spoiled offspring. They sing that it took 400 years of misery to bring me here. My suicide is not an acceptable offering. They sing that I was expressly put on this planet to speak dynamite to granite. That I was intended to spit tears into microphones so that billions of disenfranchised black children might find their way back home. And I cry because I am ashamed that I could be killed for what I'm thinking. And I want her to come so bad, but I manage. I want her to come so bad, but I manage. I want her to come for me so bad, but I manage to pull the gun off of my tongue, turn my thoughts indivisibly in the direction of black youth, and behold, ejaculating out of my throat is the truth.
Welcome one, welcome all. This is the Next Step Radio Show, brought to you on the Antimatter Zone Radio Network. I am your host, Jacob Appleman. To reach me, you can email me at thenextstepradioshow@charter.net. That is thenextstepradioshow@charter.net. My website, infowarts.com. That's infowarts.com. Thank you for joining us today in episode number 12. That poem you heard up front was by an artist named Talam Acey, and it is entitled Killed for What I'm Thinking. Very talented man. We hope to have him on a podcast in the very near, short future. What we're going to talk about today, as everybody may or may not know, this is built as a solutions-based radio show. I want to bring real solutions that real people can really achieve to the fore. A lot of solutions out there, I feel, are airy-fairy and unreachable and actually work the opposite. They discourage people. you know, auditing the Fed, voting them all out, things like that tend to, you know, in my estimation, discourage people from real solutions. But start closer to home. And one of the biggest things I see when people awaken in what, you know, is loosely referred to as the truth movement is the desire to tell everybody. You know, you got to go shout from the mountaintops, you know, 9/11 was an inside-out job. You know, things like that. You know, the Federal Reserve is not federal and they have no reserves. But I see a huge deal of frustration because, you know, you can only see and talk to so many people in a day. Obviously, both sides of the false paradigm are corrupt and, you know, unwilling to bring real information to the table as far as the media goes. You know, whether it's the right wing or the left wing, they're both wings on a bird of prey that is, you know, apparently plucking our eyeballs out. So people want to express truths, you know, on a larger scale, and the frustration comes in because there's a lot of COINTELPRO type manipulation in the mainstream media. You know, the left wing won't let you speak. Positively about conservative ideas, you know, and conversely, the right wing won't let people speak freely about liberal ideas. So you're caught in this game of pong that never seems to go anywhere. Well, one of the things I found in my personal path is a huge solution that is very much so overlooked, and I'd like to explore that with you a bit today. And then in the second half of the show, I'm going to play for you an interview that I think you'll find interesting. The solution to getting your message out, exercising your First Amendment, as far as media goes, you have a couple choices. You can go to a four-year degree, go to a four-year university, receive a degree in communications, hopefully get an internship with a Clear Channel type operation, and maybe one day, maybe you'll actually get your own show. Or you can become completely technologically proficient, you know, start a website or a podcast or an alternative news media. Both of those are very achievable, but for your average person getting started, it can seem daunting. But we have another alternative. There's another choice out there for broadcasting. And it's, like I said, it's very overlooked. Often people rarely use it. And I'd love to bring this topic up. Community radio. Yes, I said it, community radio. Now, a lot of you may be thinking, oh, that's the station way down the dial that plays reggae and, you know, African drum beats all Saturday, but you might be correct. So here's the beautiful part. Community radio involves community participation. And while currently a community radio station near you may be playing reggae or blues music a great deal of the time, that's where they feel the community interest is. That doesn't mean that can't change, and that doesn't mean you can't get involved. There are a plethora of community radio stations, and like I said, you don't need a degree to walk into one. You don't need, you know, a specific, you know, air check, lots of experience to get started. You know, the first step would be to go down there and ask what it would take to get involved. For example, I live in a rural part of Missouri where I'm, you know, an hour's drive from the next largest city, somewhere in between Kansas City and St. Louis. And so, you know, there's lots of people in this vicinity, A, who don't have a communications degree, B, don't have, you know, a high-speed connection where they can start their own broadcast or podcast. And so, you know, they feel greatly discouraged in getting involved in, you know, local media. But on the flip side of that, there are, within a 100-mile radius, four community radio stations. We have Warrensburg, Missouri, two in Kansas City, and one in Lawrence. A lot of college towns have community radio stations. These are a valuable tool. They're way underutilized, and it's easier to get started in one than you think, because you don't have to have a sponsorship, and you don't have to have, you know, an internship. If you have a clear mind and a solid base and a confident point from which you want to communicate a point, they're more than willing to, take that on. And like I said, there's colleges in smaller towns all across the planet that offer alternative ideas in radio format that don't involve degrees, specifications, and huge sponsorships. So I'd like to explore and give people a few resources or places to go where they can take that next step if one wanted to get involved locally, whether it was politics or education or true world history, or let's say you have a musical talent in spoken word or poetry or a new genre of instrumental music. All of these things that could better us as a planet and a community and a human race that you wanted to share on a larger scale, all of that's possible through community radio. You don't have to be tech savvy. You don't have to be web savvy. You don't have to have specialized knowledge. Like I said, if you bring talent and a open mind and a pure heart and are willing to work for it, you can get your message, expression, talent out there. And that's, like I said, a valuable tool in what we call the truth movement, because, like I said, there are more community radio stations in this country than you can imagine. There are lots of rural communities. All it takes is participation and a willingness to be patient and learn. So your first step, obviously, finding out where they are and how to get involved. There's some pretty neat websites. If you went to www.grradio.org, that's grradio.org, which stands for Grassroots Radio Coalition, there's several links here to find members and, community radio station throughout the country. There's another excellent website from the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. That's www.nfcb.org, National Federation of Community Broadcasters, nfcb.org, is another awesome resource, because they have lots of services, community radio news, assessments, representation, board trainings, links, lists of stations. It's a plethora of information on community radio in general. Another fabulous website that lets you jump, and this one's dedicated mostly to North America. There's links here if you want to find international places, international stations. The website is www.gumbopages.com. That's jumbopages.com. And it's the non-commercial radio stations around North America and the world. Or if you're kind of web savvy, get on any search engine, use key phrases like community radio and then your local area or your zip code or a community radio station list. And I'll say it again, terrestrial radio is a very powerful tool. It's the medium lots and lots and lots of people listen to. If you're in a rural area with a decent tower, you can reach thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people inside that broadcast area without a specialized degree, a sponsor, or a massive website with lots of traffic. You know, and it's got to start somewhere. This media roadblock that we all fight against, you know, we're never going to convince Fox News to, you know, bring reality and truth to people. You'll never convince, you know, CNN to do the same. These megalithic corporations that are interested in broadcasting corporate points of view are there for that purpose. And you have to not fight the pyramid. You have to invert that pyramid. You have to take the power back. You know, you can't change an immovable structure, but you can build your own. So community radio stations are a fabulous tool. I implore everyone out there, if you're interested in, you know, broadcasting truth and relevance, or you have a new idea or something inspirational you would like to share in the form of, you know, a musical talent or things like that, by all means, community radio stations, they're everywhere. Find one, get involved, and you'll not believe the relief and content feelings you'll get from, you know, doing the right thing, trying to help others, you know, and it's one step at a time with a bunch of non-corporate community broadcasts going around. You know, and that's also an excellent way to build local news and local topics. You know, if there's a particular police state or environmental issue going on in your local area that is extremely difficult to convince a national broadcast to cover your local topic, you know, get involved locally. You know, your megaliths, Foxes and CNNs and ABCs and NBCs, you know, they have their little local flavor type stations, but even those tend to, you know, toe the corporate line. But there's that huge underutilized tool in community radio that I feel those of us in the truth movement who are sick of corporate-backed propaganda, we can one piece at a time take this back and start broadcasting through the air truth and positivity and official statements, things that can actually make a difference in people's lives. There's a local community radio station close to me that once I had a, you know, not, I wouldn't say a full awakening, but I was way on the track of understanding, you know, our current situation and the matrix built around us. You know, I was fortunate enough to reach out to a community radio station and a particular broadcaster who was open-minded enough to hear a view that wasn't right and wasn't left and incorporated facts and truth. And other areas of inspiration. So that's one of the ways I got started in trying to make a difference locally. Because I can't change the world, I can only change my world. And my world was inside the broadcast radius of a certain community radio station. I knew you didn't have to be a corporate homeboy or, you know, somebody with massive sponsorship. You can go talk to real people about real ideas and broadcast them to your local community. And then, you know, if what you got is neat and picks up steam and people like it, you know, then there's other avenues to explore from there. So definitely think about that. If you want to change your world in the broadcasting arena, college radio, community radios, there's local places everywhere. Far more than you can imagine. They are more than willing and would be happy to bring in fresh faces and fresh ideas and share positivity with those in their community. In particular, there's a broadcaster near me. His name is Ben Johnson. I met many years ago and we had lots and lots of conversations about things like the truth and true world history. And not only was he willing to let me come on his community radio broadcast and express myself, you know, a pretty good friendship built up out of it. And you know, he's where I got my inspiration in wanting to help others in the broadcast arena. Because I'm a radio junkie. I love listening to radio. I love listening to lots of types of radio. And Ben Johnson was inspirational enough to me to, you know, show me that it could be done. It's not somebody in a skyrise in New York broadcasting nationwide. It's real people with real ideas in your local community can do the same thing. And I had no, you know, I was in my 20s before I figured that out. You don't have to be, you know, a Clear Channel, yuppie type to get involved. You know, here's a guy with a massive amount of intelligence, a desire to change his community, and an educational background where he felt confident in expressing his ideas. And he went and took that next step himself without being prodded or handed to him. You know, it was lots of hard work and dedication, and his show grew and grew and grew. You know, and became a staple in what you could consider the truth movement in that community. And I was always honored to be a guest and a co-host and a co-producer of Ben Johnson's show. And so I always bring this up when it comes to things like changing your world, is we need more involvement in community radio. There's lots of involvement now. You may think some of it's boring and for old people. But that doesn't mean it's not changeable. If there's a station near you, you want to broadcast something better, go down there and see what it takes to get involved, because I think you'll be shocked about how simple it is and about how effective it is. And on that topic, Ben Johnson, the host of Paragon Radio on a local community radio station that's the 90.1 FM KKFI, is a heavy hitter in the truth movement in this area. And he and I, I first have been exploring the work of Dr. Judy Wood, obviously, and taking that next step in empirical research into the actual events of 9/11. And, you know, Ben hadn't heard a lot of this information, and so him and I have been having several discussions about Dr. Judy Wood's research. And as a side note, if this is your very first time tuning in, go to www.drjudywood.com, drjudywood.com, and check out her research. It's a plethora of stuff to get into now, but it also serves a larger point, I think, in pointing out things like not getting comfortable and not assuming that you have it all figured out. And if you're passionate about something, you need to keep on it. And that the truth is going to be a lifelong journey. You're not going to have it all figured out at 33 and then you just ride on that new set of laurels. No. Open-mindedness and empirical research will lead you in new directions if you stay true to the pursuit. So without any further ado, the rest of the broadcast here will be dedicated to a little interview Ben and I did about new information concerning 9/11, and I think it serves as a larger teaching tool as we express new ideas to each other, how we can, you know, continue to shatter paradigms, because we got through the left-right paradigm and we got through, you know, the 9/11, the false flag paradigm, the problem-reaction-solution bit. But don't rest on that, because the story hasn't been told yet and we're not fully out of the matrix. We're well on our way, but let's all collectively take the next step. I say a special thanks to Ben Johnson and Paragon Radio. He also does a show called The Radio Redux. You can find information to all of those shows at my website, www.infowarts.com, infowarts.com. Here we go. Thank you. paradigm-shattering thing. The same reason people hate Alex Jones in the mainstream is the same people in...
Yeah, but I mean, if she really has some good ideas, don't you think Alex would just take them and make them his own?
Well, let's set Alex aside, because like I said, I've heard him say personally, he likes to keep the bulk of his info to the hardcore provable stuff to wake up as many people as possible, and he wants to leave that be his role. And I agree with
that. The difference between Loose Change First Edition and Loose Change Final Cut.
Correct. They snipped out the flash in the pods, and I'm down with that. And if he wants to keep his show, he's people in...
Because Loose Change Final Cut is a fabulous show. I mean, it's an excellent documentary.
Absolutely.
Loose Change First Edition, good as well, harder to prove, because, you know, when you deal with Loose Change Final Cut, we're talking about provable facts and provable facts only.
Correct.
That's powerful. I mean, that's just powerful right there. And to be able to watch something 2 hours long that's full of documented, primary source, factual information, and, you know, to not be able to argue with it, I mean, that's immense.
Correct. And I'm good with it, and I promote it, and I'm down with it. But, like, the only point I'm trying to make is there's more to the story, and that's not the end-all, be-all. And it's probably a pretty good lesson just in learning information in general. Once you think you know it all, you need to think again, because, you know, quite honestly, the crimes haven't been solved, and so that means all of the facts aren't out. While I'm not disputing Alex Jones's facts or Loose Change's facts, I'm just saying it's not the complete list. For example, termite and thermite are... Their function, take 9/11 out of it, termite and thermite's function is cutting steel, right? You would agree with that?
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, it's one of the functions, absolutely.
And it's incendiary, but it's not explosive like C4 or dynamite.
But is it even incendiary? Would that be the term? Because you have to heat thermite to a certain level before it even... It's not like a match stick where it's a little bit of friction will give it... it needs to be heated pretty good. I'm pretty sure to initiate a thermite reaction, I don't know about thermite, but thermite, you need a blowtorch.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. It's molecular and chemical properties require it to get hot for it to cut the steel, is what I mean. It's not there to make, you know, for example, if you wouldn't use thermite as a bunker buster. You know, it might move the rebar in the bunker, but it's not going to dig through the dirt and the concrete, right? And that's, I think, a huge component to Judy Wynn's argument is thermite doesn't justify concrete. It does a fantastic job of cutting steel beams apart from each other so they're able to be collapsed. Something else justified 500,000 tons of concrete. It's not thermite. Because
I guess the real question then would be if, being that we're a few days out from the 9th anniversary of September 11th, I've been fully engrossing myself with plenty of 9/11 documentaries, primary source footage of reporters and eyewitnesses, et cetera, of that day. And reaffirmation of all the bombs going off in the building is also, I think, very important. And, you know, a couple weeks back on an AM talk show that goes overnight, there was a conversation between Richard Gage and some guy from, you know, New Mexican, you know, Humanists for Secular Truth or something.
Right.
Some organization. And, you know, they were talking about, well, if there was controlled demolition, then you would have heard loud explosions. Every other control panel. And, you know, Richard Gage, God bless his heart. I mean, I think he's a good guy. He doesn't have the ability to convey some information. You know, I think he's obviously working for the right reasons. He's just, you know, he's an architect. He's not a spokesmouth or whatnot. But the idea is that you can come back and you can hear all kinds of huge explosions. And you go back and you listen to the firefighters talking about hearing the, you know, it sounded like detonators. Boom, 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 boom. You know, like they were trying to bring the building down. You listen to that, which is completely unedited. right there. I mean, something we're talking, I mean, if we're going to talk about, like, say that Judy Woods got a point, introduce some of her information in here as well, like, we're going to make her a part of our, you know, equal sign. You know, we don't know what happened here. We're trying to figure it out, and we're going to try to come to our best, most logical guess. You know, we're going to come up with a theory, and we're going to try to test it, you know, not scientifically, but certainly philosophically. And, like, bombs would be in place, traditional explosives of some sort, maybe nuclear. I mean, there's some stuff out there to talk about that.
Right.
And you need thermite to cut up the building knives. And
right.
Then we're talking about a directed energy weapon as well. And that purpose then serves to justify the concrete, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And we're talking about concrete justification. I don't know, like, I would imagine that there's not a lot of understanding of what happens when you bring down a building of that magnitude, because I wonder what the tallest building that's ever been destroyed with controlled demolition is.
Well, are you
like,
ready?
Do you know? That would be interesting.
Well, those
are 110 stories of buildings that, if you go back and you look at the architect and all the construction managers on the deal, there were 110 stories each that weren't meant to be destroyed. They're supposed to last forever.
Right. And you've brought up a key point to this, because seismograph readings aren't in dispute by anybody. And I've poured over, you know, the fringe, the not fringe, the down homes, the way out there's, the mainstream and the underground. I've poured over all that. And I haven't seen anybody dispute the seismographic evidence, right? But you would agree that there's proof positive seismographic evidence of an event occurring at that point?
Well, I don't know. I believe that has been refuted. And I can't say who that was refuted by. I don't know if that was NIST that refuted that, or if that was just an independent 9/11 truther.
Right. Well,
the guy acting on his own, like, who should have received a paycheck from, you know, the NSA or the federal government or the CIA a long time ago, but for free, you know, a freelance kind of guy.
So check this out. When they calculate seismographic prints, there's physics equations that go with that, right? The shaking and the tremors and the magnitude and earth displacement, all of that combines in an equation to give you the 6.2 or the 9.8 or the 0.1. You have to have a certain amount of movement, velocity, and energy as you go up the Richter scale. The bigger the number, the more shaking. You can calculate out Richter scales as a math problem. The physical weight of both structures doesn't come anywhere near close to what it should read if all of that material hit the ground at its full volume. Because
You're saying the seismographic documents are doctored?
No, I'm saying they're way too small. If all of that material were classically exploded and all came crashing to the ground, yet in smaller pieces.
I see what you're saying. Like, it doesn't make sense. If there were a pancake theory, all the weight of that building would have made the ground shake more than it did. Not that the ground didn't shake like the world was coming to an end, but those buildings were so behemoth that it would have shook up the ground to a point where it would have registered more on the Richter scale.
Right, and here's a perfect example. You asked me what the building was. I don't know. But I can prove, and nobody disputes this, when they demolitioned the King Dome in Seattle, the football stadium, it measured a 2.6 on the Richter scale. We're talking less than one at the WTC site.
It's kind of bizarre, because they always talked about, years ago, I mean, a couple years ago, not too long, right? But I mean, like, literally, like, 2007, you know, they would say that the building was not a traditional demolition. You know, you have to use this as a controlled demolition, and, you know, most people are not experts in demolition, right? But you can't view it as a, you know, traditional, it was top-down, it wasn't
right.
Like the bottom. And even though Willie Rodriguez talked about, you know, hearing large explosions, you know, in the base of the World Trade Center, and many other people either witnessed that or suffered injury or death from that, you know, that those buildings, you know, did. We saw them on TV, you know, the video evidence of them breaking up where the planes hit, you know, and then disintegrating into air, which is the part I have a problem with. I saw the planes hit the buildings. I watched the TV for, you know, an hour and an hour and a half after that. But I didn't understand that end part.
Right. And
it makes any sense.
And Judy Wood is on board with a demolition. She's just saying that it's exactly, it's not your classic controlled demolition. Because your classic controlled demolition uses thermite, and shape charges to cut the building into smaller pieces, and then gravity and it falling in on itself smashes.
You take out the structural support.
Right.
The engineering of the building.
Right, so you can calculate the amount of matter and materials, concrete, steel, toilets, rebar, windows, in the towers, and you can calculate the rubble pile, and the two don't equal each other. And because like I was trying to explain, that dust cloud that covered lower Manhattan is the bulk of the buildings. The debris pile can be mathematically calculated to... Basically, it's 80% short of its full volume. So
80%?
80% short of its full volume. It was a magnitude of, because when you go up the Richter scale, every one is exponential. So it's not like the next step is 1. The next step is 100, and the step above that is 1,000, and the step above that is 10,000. The Richter scale is exponential. The King Dome was 3 times more of a register on the Richter scale in the world.
Let's go back to the idea of the volume of the dust particles that were created. Because in every controlled demolition, there is an explosion that creates a pyroclastic cloud. Volcanoes do it too, right? We're talking about Vulcan. We're talking about breaking up metal, you know, doing something powerful. You know? And within that, I mean, there was a lot of dust.
Absolutely.
And to say that it was only 20%?
No, that was 80% of the buildings, that dust cloud.
That was 80%, so there's another 20% that's unaccounted for?
No, that other 20% is the rubble pile. The rubble pile has dimensions. 500,000 tons of building material that it took to make the tower would have dimensions, like if you take out the floor space and you condense that, you know what I'm saying? Like there's space in between each floors, obviously. The building's not a solid piece of material. You take that.
No, I get what you're saying. Right. And they had a big hole to work with too. I mean, it might support your argument about the energy weapons. That they had to clear out the basement to load the place up.
Right, and that's where I want to further investigate as I keep, because see, a lot of people.
You realize, like, what you're trying to say is that's hardcore. I mean, you're saying that you just destroyed something, you created. I mean, energy is neither created nor destroyed, right?
It just changes forms. Yeah, the buildings.
Yeah,
right.
So, what form did it change into? Are you saying it was aerosol?
Dustifies
or whatever?
Right, it was dustification. That massive pyroclastic cloud is what used to be the buildings. They're not chunks of concrete on the ground. They're separate particles floating through the air.
Sure. You're saying that that's only possible through direct energy?
Like you said, volcanoes would do it. Thermonuclear weapons would do it. Thermite does not.
No, they didn't have a volcano. Wait, thermite would not do that. But, you know, an argument that's used by, you know, anti-truthers. And what they say is that, you know, the potential energy of those buildings was immense because of how tall they were and how much metal was in them. And, you know, like, and when that gets put into kinetic motion, you know, that's the official understanding of what happened to those buildings, right?
Right.
Is that you took out enough of the support where it got into kinetic motion and just destroyed itself perfectly. You know, absolutely perfectly into a little pile of building and people.
The slurry wall, or some people refer to it as the bathtub, these things were anchored literally to the bedrock of the planet, 70 feet below sea level. The slurry wall keeps the Hudson River out of the basement of the World Trade Center complex.
Sure.
The amount of
The slurry wall was not destroyed.
The slurry wall had pipes that weren't even severed sticking out of it still, not even cracked. And you want to hear a funny story that this kind of almost proved it to me that Judy Wood was onto something. The slurry wall was not damaged during the demolition. Once they got the heavy earth movers in there to start clearing stuff out, they cracked the wall. Giant earth-moving dump trucks, and I had, and why that stuck with
well,
me.
Well, I mean, well, do you know that? How do you know that to be a fact?
Okay, because she spent lots and lots of time there documenting lots and lots of this stuff. She has.
But my point is, then you're going on her and her alone.
Well, I'm not, because she's recorded this.
I mean, if you have other evidence that, like, you know, like before and after pictures of the slurry wall.
Okay, well, and here would be my evidence apart from Judy.
There are pictures that come from a good place, I guess.
Is Lower Manhattan underwater? That would be the proof that the slurry wall didn't break up during the demolition. Because
it wouldn't be Lower Manhattan. It would have been like, yeah, well, no, right. No, absolutely. I'm not saying the slurry wall didn't break up. You're saying that it was only damaged because of the earth mover.
Right, and well, and let me...
The big old truck is what damaged it.
Well, and several, and let me explain how I felt that. Because my current place of employment, right next to where I work, they removed the parking lot and built a FEMA storm shelter over the last 11 months or what have you. And I physically, with my own eyes, saw walls crack. And they had just two earth movers pushing gravel and dirt around to, you know, before you pour the foundation, you got to make sure it's on. You do layers of sand and gravel.
Yeah, I've been on the street when a bus rolls by. I mean, I know what you're talking about.
Right, yeah. So you get some heavy equipment, you know, running a low-gear diesel engine. You know, you're causing some ultra-low frequencies. And apparently, you know, and I didn't witness it with my eyes, that they did have cracking in the bathtub from the earth movers, but not the demolition. So, yes, and that brings me back to our original point. You're talking about loose change and all the other stuff in the firsthand eyewitness, the noise and the popping and explosions. Yeah, all that's there. But yes, if the full magnitude of that would have all hit the ground, you can multiply that, you know, exponentially. It should have been so much louder, people can't even comprehend. And that's the Towers 1 and 2. Tower 7 was kind of different. There, and she has on her website, two different videos that she didn't take of news reporters, you know, doing like an on-scene deal. And their microphones don't even pick up the collapse of Tower 7 or the densification of Tower 7. Because, again, in that instance also, the full weight of the building never actually hit the ground. It breaks up, it falls, and again, the seismic reading to that one was barely noticeable. And it should have been,
yeah,
I think.
Well, I mean, yeah. I don't know, I've seen, in Loose Change, right? Or is that 9/11 Mysteries? Yeah, like the, might be 9/11 Mysteries.
And here's another thing to consider.
They just have, like, the seismographic image up, and they're just showing you, you know, the bombs that exploded beforehand.
Right,
because
yeah,
there were bombs. That's kind of interesting. So, I mean, this would have been, I mean, now we're talking about thermite, the thermite, whatever, you know, bombs, and as well a directed energy weapon, you know, fueled by a hurricane.
Absolutely.
That's, you can't steal somebody else or somebody at all off of 9/11 truth with that line.
No, you can't. And
that's deep, man. You don't get much deeper than that. You know, I mean, you've already gone down pretty far if you're a truther, because our society is built upon so many lies.
Absolutely, but
you've already gotten deep. If you know, I mean, it's about not only do they plant bombs and thermite, which is, you know, we're just getting to bombs. You can understand thermite getting to the inner core, like of the building and all that. then, you know, to direct the energy weapons fueled by a hurricane.
But here's another thing to think about. If you are in the act of particle dissociation, there would be lots of pressurized containers, i.e. water tanks, gas lines, there's fire extinguishers, there's a multitude of metal containers that once those particles dissociate would, in quotes, explode also. Because you're separating metal and concrete into individual particles. That's not, you know, exclusively for, you know, the walls, ceilings, and floors. You know, all your gas lines and your fire extinguishers and your refrigerator, Freon tanks, and everything else is going to pop and go too. And the other analogy she talks about, when water turns into steam, it's explosive in nature, but water is not an explosive. See, because when water turns into steam, those particles dissociate, and they require 1,400 times the volume to maintain their kinetic energy in the form of a gas over water. You have a similar analogy to when concrete basically turns into concrete steam. It's going to expand and make noise and appear to have explosive properties while yet not igniting and detonating, if that makes any sense.
That's a whole lot. I mean, a whole bunch.
It is. And here's another.
What I'm saying, I mean, I see what Jeff said. I think it's not necessary for me. I mean, I still think 9/11 was an inside job.
Can we say?
And I wonder how much closer this gets us to some sort of resolution.
Well, and
prosecution.
It seems bizarre, but that actually is her point. Because if you take a faulty case to court, they can laugh at you all the way up one side and down the other. So, for example, let's say you take the thermite case to court, which incidentally nobody ever has for 9/11 truth, and she has actually taken her evidence to the Supreme Court on the grounds that NIST is a taxpayer-funded operation, and she can scientifically prove their report is wrong because she has this other science that disproves what NIST is saying. NIST is filing false documents on that behalf of the taxpayers, ergo defrauding taxpayers. And it seems like
It'd be a hard job to find a judge who would be willing to take a legitimate 9/11 claim case.
Right.
That wasn't based upon a victim's family, but just was based upon, like, allegations of wrongdoing, you know, on taxpayer dollars or the 9/11 commission or George Bush or anything.
Right. And here's the beautiful part. They dismissed her case. And in the summary, and this is all on our website, drjudywood.com, drjudywood.com, they admitted to the fact that the defendants in the case, and whether it's NIST specifically or whether they're under the umbrella of the Department of Commerce or however that works out, I don't think NIST is a freestanding federal agency. I'm sure they're a subsidiary of some other federal group. But basically, and I'll summarize it, they
might be part of the Department of the Interior.
Yeah, however that works. Maybe the MMS. Wouldn't that be funny? Anyway, they admitted in her case that they had to ignore federal law because the bulk of her science in refuting NIST is basically going to undermine state secrets. So, it's legalese, and all, like I said, all this stuff's on her website. You can go check it out. But she's taking it to court. They didn't arrest her or throw her in jail for filing false claims. And in the summary,
you don't get thrown in jail for that. You get fined.
They
give you a fine, they don't throw you in jail.
Reprimanded on some level. But she didn't get in trouble, and they actually gave her respect in the footnote that, you know, they have no fault with her case, But moving forward with it means a whole lot of, you know, bad chemistry for a lot of other people they don't want to deal with. And that also goes, because you asked me about, does this thing is close for prosecution. That's why she's exploring this avenue, because if you take this other stuff to court or try to investigate with incomplete evidence, you're not going to get to who did it. Because now think about it. Are we sure? And if we can't prove exactly what happened.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
If you can't prove what did it, then you can't prove who did it. You got to start with all the facts first. So, you know, let's say in a hypothetical situation, we found out the serial number and frequency and the exact type of weapon used. What if it wasn't America? What if it wasn't our industrial complex that did it? Chew on that one.
You said it was Muslims?
Or the Russians or the Jews or the Vatican or picks whoever, you know.
Don't you think they take responsibility for it? Are you saying, like...
If somebody had a directed energy weapon that could disappear 7 buildings, I don't think they would take credit for it now.
No, 7 buildings didn't disappear. That's not true.
3 completely disappeared. The other...
the buildings were, I don't think, nearly as tall, and they were. Some of them are still there.
There was pieces of them. There was the vast
majority. Didn't Building 5, it burned all day and didn't collapse due to structural fire.
But if you look at the overhead photos, it was completely gutted. Yeah, the facade made it through, but it was, you know, again.
Building 5 was like 10 stories next to the World Trade Center. That would have looked ridiculous.
Right, but the bigger point is that destruction wasn't limited to those 3, because a lot of the truth movement focuses on 1, 2, and 7 for good reason. But I'm just saying the other buildings were rendered useless also, though they weren't completely annihilated. It's not like they could throw some new windows and carpet and...
Yeah. And I think the reason they don't get talked about is because they're really small buildings. You know, World Trade Center 7 was 47 stories. I mean, that's a big-ass building.
Exactly, but what I'm saying is...
The other 4, they were pretty small, I'm pretty sure.
By comparison, absolutely, but there were still large enough structures that, you know, one would take note of, and they were damaged irreparably from the same attack.
Oh, absolutely damaged irreparably.
And that's her larger point. If you want to build a solid case of whodunit, you have to start with how.
You do have to figure that out. There's no doubt about that.
And again, she, you know, you can pour over her website. She doesn't start off with a conclusion that says, I think Space Beans did it, and then try and fit all this stuff. She was a pure skeptic. Something didn't smell right to her on that day. She started collecting evidence. She's an engineering professor. She has a PhD. Her business isn't selling cars. You know, she thinks and writes math 90% of the time.
If it comes down to a court case, I mean, the bottom point here is that as long as people are willing to accept that, you know, Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden and not see, I guess, reality in front of them, the obvious nature of the way things happened on that day and have transpired ever since, and just accept it with their intention. Because for 9/11 truth to ultimately work, it would be people refusing to participate within society because they believe that society was based upon a lie. And that does not include violence. It just means non-participation. It's like when civil rights leaders did not participate with Jim Crow laws. And they had sit-ins, you know? And that's what it truly comes down to. It's going to be a court case. The courts will never hear it. There's no way you can get a... I mean, you could try a case as perfect as a flower on its first day or a sunrise or whatever, man. I mean, it could be... And you could still have the judge reject it.
Absolutely.
A legal ground, not on a technical ground, just on a, like, I don't want to do this. And you said, you know, intimated to that, to the same point. And in broader terms, what does it matter if it was directed energy weapons? Because that is really not what I'm afraid of. I mean, I'm not afraid of Al-Qaeda either. I'm afraid of the people that did 9/11 more than anything else. Maybe that fear should include directed energy weapons, but at the same time, you can only let your paranoia take you so far before, you know, you don't come back.
Absolutely. And I think that's the bigger picture. You know, one of the mind frame changes I've had lately is, you know, for the longest time, being a hardcore member of the truth movement, I was doing my solid best to convert everybody. And while I don't disparage that action and I encourage it, it needs to be tempered with a great deal of changing, you know, yourself first. See, because the topic of 9/11 from a pure empiricist point of view or a radical skeptic, I just want to know. You know, I research JFK still, and that's, you know, what am I going to solve by doing that? Ultimately, nothing. Am I going to change the entire country with my work? No. But I just simply want to know. Maybe it's the math genius popping out in me that hit the problem that I can do kind of part of, or that crossword puzzle, there's like four words you can't figure out. You just spend a little extra time on it, and then, you know, you're like, oh, wow, look at that. I found another piece. You know, just when you thought you were at the end of your rope, you know, there's another piece. So ultimately, what does Judy Woods' work mean to me? One, there's more to the story. Two, the act of knowing is what I'm after. Not necessarily changing the world. And three, like you said, yeah, if you want to, like,
But ultimately, if you want to appeal to people, you have to tell them why. I mean, how it happens is a question they ask, and then you explain it to them. But it's a why question. Why would 9/11 be an inside job? Because most people are hesitant to even review information if you are trying to, you know, argue that point. Because they don't believe the government would kill 3,000 of its own citizens.
Right.
They can't understand the way governments are not people, they're not emotional, they're not empathetic or sympathetic, they are apathetic, they are sociopathic, I mean, that's the nature of them.
Right,
and they're not something to be loved or trusted, they're something to be used, they're a tool. You don't trust a wrench or a socket set or anything like that, you use it for its purpose, and give it to have its purpose. And like, the bottom line being is that people are all confused. And at the same time, people know Congress has got a 9% approval rating, but nonetheless, I give legitimacy to my government because I believe what they say, because I believe the lies they tell.
And that's
the mind-blowing part.
Right, or here's the even bigger mind-blowing part, is the government didn't do 9/11. That's, I think, what we ultimately need to put our minds around.
The government didn't do 9/11, Jake. I mean, I know that.
Right.
I mean, you know, I mean, you have to, I mean, it was an inside job because the people that had, like, the special cards to get into the Bush White House, the people that had the cards, like the key cards, just got them in all the doors.
Yeah, they're implanted.
That they do not represent the government. They're not the little old lady down at the Social Security Administration. They're not, you know, the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, like, you know, militarized, you know, ranger types. I mean, you know, they're not all that. I mean, they're something else. They're operating on a level. And it was no doubt. I mean, how could you like that time and not see that something like that was coming?
Did you, and real quick before I forget, that's why I'm re-terming it, 9/11 was an inside-out job.
Yeah, dude, that is perfect. Is that a website?
No, that's what I put on my website.
No, I'm saying, could you have 9/11 was an inside-out job .com?
I don't know, but I will tell you this, Dr. Judy Wood has seen my posting at InfoWars, and she dropped that in an interview today. When they asked her if she thought it was an inside job, she said, you know, now that I think about it, I'm going to start calling it an inside-out job.
Yeah, right. No, it's true. That's perfect, Jake, man. That's genius. Yeah, that's cool, man. Continue on and do what's right.